Linoleum knife. I didn't want to let that go on for very long.
And why not?
Well, because I know that the world does not share. I'm taking off these glasses because I'm not reading at the moment.
Okay.
The world does not share my enthusiasm for the Partridge Family.
Fools they are. If they knew better, they would do better.
You know what? Here's the thing. First of all, this is Linoleum Knife. It is a podcast of the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you say it is a podcast on the cinema, which is like seated on top of the cinema.
Yeah, that's how I mean it exactly. It is on cinema like cheese sauce. It is a multifaceted
preposition. We are real film critics.
Believe it or not.
I'm Dave White. I'm the film critic for movies.com.
Yes.
Also, you are Alonzo Duralde, who is the film critic of ontherap.com.
You can say on when you mean pertaining to.
It's a kind of an old-timey way of saying something. It's like when Lucy says to Schroeder, you're the one who's the nut on Beethoven. It is acceptable, and it is correct.
I kick it old school.
It's old-timey, though.
I'm Alonzo Duralde. I'm the film critic for The Wrap. But you didn't finish.
I said TheWrap.com. I swallowed it and chuckled at the same time.
Right, that's why I need to share this vital information.
I think people
I'm the film critic for TheWrap.com and for What the Flick on YouTube.
Y'all just did a gang of videos this week.
Yeah, well, between next week being Thanksgiving and then Ben is out of town for 2 weeks between the TCM cruise and something else.
More TCM stuff.
We decided to try and bank a bunch of stuff. We're going to go in and do more on Tuesday. We're trying to get as much Ben as we can before he leaves town because he's seen a lot of stuff that's coming up. So
right, and he's your star.
We are all of us in Destiny's Child. Ben's the famous are equally one. Important.
Ben's the famous one, and you guys are the other three Destiny's children. Ben is the Beyonce.
Wow,
and. And you are Kelly.
Well, thanks, I guess.
And
Who does that make Christy and Matt?
Christy is... No, I'm sorry. Christy is Kelly.
Oh, great.
You're Michelle.
Oh.
And Matt is the one they kicked out back in the day when she didn't get along with Beyonce.
I dare you to say that to their faces.
I will.
And by there, I mean Kelly and Michelle.
It's Kelly. Michelle, you are like this 46-year-old fat bearded film critic.
I don't think you can handle this.
Woo! She wouldn't get upset though because she's very sweet. So I hear.
Uh-huh. Because y'all are such tight bros.
We're such tight bros, me and Michelle Williams of Destiny's Child, not the other Michelle.
Not the other Michelle Williams.
Where were we? What the Flick?
Yes.
Now Ben Mankiewicz is the film equivalent of Beyonce Knowles,
and we are all being dressed by a House of Darion.
Yeah. Do you think Ben can pop that booty like Beyonce can? Have we watched him?
Have
we ever watched him dance?
I'm going to guess no.
I've never seen him dance.
I'm going to guess no.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Ben strikes me as strictly white man underbite kind of dancing.
Perhaps.
I could be wrong.
You never know.
I could be totally wrong.
I think you need to ask him.
I'll do that.
When you guys do a...
Dave White wants to know.
Dave wants to know how good a dancer you
are. Can you pop
are?
That booty? How's your twerking?
How's your twerk?
You're picturing it now, aren't
Ben
you?
Ben Mankiewicz for TCM. Here's Ninotchka. Now watch me shake my ass.
Billy Wilder once said.
What's happening?
I don't even know.
Week? What are you talking about?
So many things.
The Partridge Family.
The Partridge Family. Yeah,
you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tie this all together the way it needs to be, and we're going to do this first.
In a Christmas gift to you?
We're going to do this first.
Okay, fine.
This thing I'm holding in my hand.
Okay.
We're going to do this
that
first.
That's a visual that our audience is not getting at all.
There's a reason that I played this Partridge Family cassette. It is a commercially produced cassette. It is not a homemade tape. the Razor and Tie record label in the 90s reissued all the Partridge Family albums on CD and cassette.
Were they like rerunning the Partridge Family on VH1 or something?
They may have been, like, but in general it was the 90s.
Okay.
And the 90s meant the 70s.
Right.
Oh, yeah. In terms of pop culture, oh, yeah. Like excavations.
Two Brady Bunch movies.
And so...
lest we forget.
And anyone who listens to this podcast very carefully has perhaps heard me say that I want our comments to come in the form of handwritten letters. In the mail this week from Jennifer, whose last name withheld for her privacy. Mm-hmm. Jennifer in Canada, who's my new favorite person in the world, not only sent us a Partridge Family Christmas card, the Christmas album, on the Razor and Tie label, like it's a commercially produced cassette. Mm-hmm. Not only did she send us that Christmas album. Mm-hmm. Now, I had this Christmas album when I was a little kid.
I know you did.
On vinyl. Mm-hmm. And it came with a cutout in the front cover, a slot, in which sat...
A Christmas card.
A Christmas card from the Partridge Family to you. Mm-hmm. In its own envelope. Mm-hmm. I've lost that Christmas card. But I still have the record. And she sends us this cassette and a handwritten letter. Here it is. Dear David Alonso, here is a cassette for your towering collection. I believe it was given to me as a stocking stuffer in the so bad it's good ironic mid-90s. Now, I got to disagree a little bit about that because I think the Partridge Family were terrific.
Right.
They weren't so bad it's good. They're just good.
Yes, but I suspect irony played a large role.
Well, in that kind of thing. Yeah, totally. I have no cassette player in my life now, which makes me sad.
Mm.
She didn't write that word. She didn't write which makes me sad.
Yeah, no, you're editorializing.
I'm editorializing this letter. So I know it will find a better home with you. And since you asked, here is my list of top 10 Christmas movies.
Yes, which
with explanation.
I have been asking, and frankly, listeners, you're letting down the side.
Don't too many of you do it, because we don't want to be having to read nothing but letters until
right. But
and we don't want to do it after Christmas.
No, absolutely. As with my book, those letters will go into the attic on December 26th. But we want to hear from you. We want to hear about your top 10 or 10 worst or whatever Christmas movies. Make us a list, like Jennifer from Canada.
Here they are.
Go.
Number one, Love Actually.
Of course.
My husband detests this movie. He will not shut up about its awfulness. I recognize its flaws, but I love it anyway and watch it alone every year.
Sure is sad to be alone on Christmas.
Two. You know, it's not good for you to quote movies that we can't even say the titles of on the air.
Didn't we talk about this on Bibs?
Did we? Well, we talked about it on the B-movies.
Oh, okay.
Where right, profanity yes. and pornography are...
Run rampant.
Are topics of conversation. But you just quoted Jeff Stryker from a Santa Claus-themed Christmas porn movie that he made.
I like to think of it as a one-man show.
That we own. It is a one-man film, if you know what I mean. And
a solo performance.
A solo performance by Jeff Stryker as Santa... in a film whose title I don't think we can say on a clean podcast. I don't think
we probably should not now.
Yeah.
Google it, you'll figure it out.
We've got the VHS tape, though, because it's real funny.
It is.
Number two, The Holiday. I can't get enough of this one.
All right.
Cameron Diaz's horrible acting can't even put me off. Here's the thing about The Holiday. It's rotten.
But it's home furnishing porn.
Oh, man, does it look good. Everybody lives in great places in The Holiday. I could watch The Holiday again just to look at their houses
right.
for 2 hours.
Well, yeah, it's the classic John Waters line about when you're bored in a movie, you can always look at the lamps. And this is a lamp movie.
Yeah. The Ref.
Yay!
This is underrated.
Totally.
Nothing like a home invasion to act as a metaphor for a holiday with your relatives. Four, you're going to love this. Mm. Arthur Christmas.
Yay!
Saw this on your recommendation.
Oh, you're welcome,
and
Jennifer.
And it was just so great. Number five, Muppet Family Christmas. I'm not sure what that is.
Is that the one that has like everybody, like the Fraggles are in it, and like all the
TV special?
It was a TV special.
Okay, so it's not a movie.
No.
Okay, well you've just ruined your list, Jennifer.
I'll allow it.
Not the Christmas Carol one. This is the one that shows on TV every year. I guess it shows on TV every year
in Canada.
Canada, yeah. Where the Muppets all go to Fozzie's mom's house for the holidays.
Yeah, that's the one.
Brilliant. I've never seen this.
Yeah, that's the one that it's the only sort of all Muppet crossover. There might even be Sesame Street Muppets on it, but they definitely have Fraggles in it.
It's like Follow That Bird has.
Muppet movie has a Big Bird cameo. Right, that's right, it. Right. Yeah.
Six, Bridget Jones' Diary. Not technically a Christmas movie. Not at all.
It's not a Christmas movie at all. There's a big Christmas party scene.
It has as much Christmas in it as the Harry Potter movie you put in your dumb book.
Oh, shush. Look, you know what? Female Trouble has only one Christmas scene.
But right, it's a significant, amazing Christmas scene.
Well,
that it matters.
Okay. Bridget Jones' Diary has Colin Firth in a reindeer sweater.
That's what she says. Colin Firth in a reindeer sweater does it for me every time.
There you go.
Number seven, we're back to the TV specials. Get It Together, Woman! A Charlie Brown Christmas. No explanation necessary. Okay, we agree. It's perfect. It's not a movie.
It's not a movie.
Eight, Bad Santa.
Yes.
Here's one I can't actually watch with my husband.
Yeah, he better. If he's not going to watch Love Actually with you, he better watch Bad Santa with you.
Everyone needs an occasional dose of darkly funny bleakness. Nine, Shop Around the Corner.
Oh, the best.
Jimmy Stewart is swoon-worthy in this.
He is.
The whole movie is comforting and adorable.
Mm-hmm.
10, last but not least, and this ties into something that's about to happen, White Christmas.
Aha.
My absolute favorite. I can practically recite it word for word. So can we. My best friend and I watch it every year and sing along. It is the best part of Christmas as far as I'm concerned. Have a great holiday, Jennifer.
Well, Thank you, Jennifer.
Here's what's fixing to happen.
Well, I like that. Not so much as a kiss my foot or have an apple.
Have an apple, right. Recently, people have begun asking us to do commentaries about...
For DVDs,
for streaming. Now, obviously, we're not going to wind up on anybody's DVD.
We did once, and we were not good at it.
You disagree with me on that. You are too hard on us.
I don't think I'm too hard on us. I think we were fine.
I don't think we were good. Anyway.
We got a nice review online from a total stranger.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I posted it somewhere. Yeah, some website that reviews these things said that we were funny.
Whatever. All right, so we've decided to do this. We've decided that what we're going to do is we're going to do, like, one... commentary track per month. One a month. We're going to sell them.
Yes.
Meaning that you are going to pay us like $2. Basically, $1.99, $2, yeah. Whatever. $2. We're at least each worth $1 of film commentary.
For a full feature.
And it will be a commentary that you can play alongside... the film as it streams, or if you own the DVD or whatever, and you know, you turn down your sound and you listen to us talk about this movie like you would any other commentary that would be on a DVD.
Right.
The first one we're going to do is White Christmas.
Yes.
Starting after Thanksgiving, we're going to record it tomorrow, actually, and it's going to be available after Thanksgiving, like when we get back from being out of town for Thanksgiving. It will be available. And you, the happy listener, will give us money, and we, in turn, will send you a link that you will be on your honor not to share and just give away for free.
Because we're not all super fancy and have it all protected and stuff.
Eventually, we need to have, like, a site where this stuff will host. But for now, once just to get it started, we're just going to send y'all a link.
We're relying on you guys not to be jerks. Yeah. I'm sure we can.
We're also relying on your support of $2 per commentary.
So we'll have more information.
I can't wait because like I know 10 people will at least do this, and we're going to make
$20.
It's going to be amazing.
We'll post information about when those are available and how to get them and all that stuff shortly.
All right. Boom, Hunger Games, go.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Catching Fire. An improvement over the first Hunger Games, which I didn't hate. I did not hate the first Hunger Games.
I really liked the first Hunger Games.
It was perfectly entertaining. This one's...
But I really, really like this one.
This one's better.
Yeah.
So, you know, we end last time with Katniss and Peeta winning the Hunger Games, and so now... It's a few months later, and they are doing their publicity tour of basically going to all the other districts and rubbing their nose in the fact that they won and the person from that district died. But the more and more she and Peeta are becoming symbols of revolution and of fomenting discontent throughout the country. President Snow, played by Donald Sutherland, is still not happy about getting snookered on the last one. So he basically tells her that she really needs to up her game in faking her romance with Peeta, even though she's still in love with Gale.
Right.
And then as a way to sort of eliminate... Once all the former victors start getting a little too big for their britches, they decide that the Quarter Quell, the 75th Hunger Games...
Something they just made up.
Well, look...
They just decided to make it up.
How many crazy terms did J.K. Rowling make up? I mean, you know...
No. I mean, the Capitol just decided to make it up and do this.
No, they mentioned that in the previous, like, 25 anniversaries, they've done this before. Not this specifically, but they've changed the rules of the game somehow.
Oh, I see. I don't remember that part.
That's mentioned in the dialogue. So this year they decided to do...
Perhaps I was distracted by munching on Vosges truffles from the Capitol collection.
Were you?
No.
Oh.
Yes, I was. $8 a pop.
Well, I don't know if for these things gave them out.
These things that are the size of a marble. Okay, it's not even like a big ball of chocolate truffle. It's
like it's a milk dud.
It's like the size of a milk. Okay, a milk dud. Yes, exactly.
Only and one that's covered in coconut ash that they give you a white cotton glove to eat it with.
There are 36 of them in the box. And the box costs $250.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a whole line of... There's the President Snow chocolate bar.
They also have bars. Those bars are like $8 or $10 a pop.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's here's this movie that's about, like, starvation, deprivation, and totalitarianism. And you've got all these corporate tie-ins. It's like, oh, the glamorous Capitol, which in the movie is sort of like...
The grotesque
pit of hell, you know. But it's like, you know, CoverGirl and Vogue chocolates. And like, wait a minute, we're missing the point here.
The only corporate tie-in that I've seen that makes me think that anyone is thinking without... just their own greed was Subway.
Yeah, because they're giving money to hunger causes.
I did the research this week, looking for any charitable distribution from Vosges for this hilarious product, which I got to admit, I had a sample of the coconut one, the coconut banana one with the chocolate, with the coconut ash on it. It's delicious.
I'm sure it is.
It's super tasty.
But its very existence
Go is. To the Vosges store in Beverly Hills and ask for a free sample. They'll give you one. But, this is gross. Like, there's no irony involved in this at all.
It'd be like if the Metropolis collection came out and it was all about, oh yes, dressed like the glamorous surface world dwellers, you know, as though your life were being maintained by slaves underground.
All right, keep talking.
Anyway, okay, so they decide the Quarter Quell is going to basically be Hunger Games All-Stars, and they bring back all of the old victors to compete. And so the stakes are raised, and we get a whole new
batch. It's like when Real World and Road Rules comes together.
Exactly like that, yes.
And Puck comes back to be on Road Rules.
And people stop being polite. Right. Which basically means we get a great new slew of character actors. We get
Amanda Plummer
and Jeffrey Wright. We get Jenna Malone. This guy, Sam Claflin, who I barely remember having been in Snow White and the Huntsman, but he's actually pretty interesting. Lynn Cohen, of all people, who played Magda the Nanny on Sex and the City, is a much older victor.
Yeah.
Anyway, this movie is directed by Francis Lawrence, who comes to the project with sort of an interesting...
Music videos.
Well, he did Constantine, which I didn't see.
Constantine,
but here's the thing. He did I Am Legend, which was a smart action movie.
Yes.
And he did Water for Elephants, which was a fairly competent romance.
Yes.
So he's really good at both of those things in this movie. You actually are interested in the relationships and the characters, and then the action stuff is really good. You don't get the Hunger Games for 80 minutes in a 2.5 hour movie. And I was not bored.
No. It's not like you're waiting around for Hunger Games.
No, not at all. But when they started, I actually pulled my watch, like, wait, what time is it? Oh my God. Like, I'm riveted, and we haven't even gotten to the dang Hunger Games yet, you know? Yeah.
But when they happen, Hunger Games.
Yeah, they're amazing. But I think the movie really is smart about playing with the political subtext that is, it's barely subtext, it's practically text.
Yeah.
You can
read this film as simply entertaining adventure, action, romance, if you want.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it doesn't cram it down your throat.
If you don't want to think about stuff, you don't have to think about stuff. You can simply go, sit through it and go, that was awesome.
Right.
But this movie is intensely political.
Yes.
And I don't know, the books at all.
Me neither.
I haven't read them. But I do know that the pop culture that you get is very often reflective of what's happening.
Of your times.
In your time. And what's happening in our time is
inequality of wealth.
Inequality of wealth and poverty creeping into every aspect of life for people who are not already super rich. Like middle class folks whose lives were formerly, fairly comfortable with, enough work,
mm-hmm.
are just struggling to stay afloat. And that's across the board now. It's not about an underclass. It's not about race anymore. It's about the domination of, public life by, these half a dozen global corporations that run everything.
Right.
And they own the politicians, and they don't care about folks.
Or the environment or anything else.
And because they have politicians in their pocket,
mm-hmm.
the politicians can now say things like, this isn't about the system not working for you. This is about you being lazy. This is about you not working hard enough. Work harder.
Mm-hmm.
Cut your food into smaller portions.
Yes, thank you.
It was that McDonald's thing you were telling me about. So I haven't even seen it.
Yeah.
But I need to find it. I bet someone copied it.
I posted it on Facebook. All right. It's shocking.
And
I think also with these movies, and I don't even know that, I haven't read the books either, so I don't know how much the author had this in mind, but there's also the dumbing down of the culture, of popular culture in a way. In a very obviously bread and circuses sort of thing. I mean, there's a lot of Roman references here from the arena to the gladiators. So, the people with names like Caesar and Seneca and Plutarch. When you think about the post-World War II generation and where they had things like the Book of the Month Club, and Bennett Cerf was somebody who you'd see on What's My Line.
Right.
There was an idea of sort of an aspirational intellectual culture that people felt like they had to at least fake like they had read books of the time that matter, or that there would be discussions of things, or there would be, you would see, they would, I mean, my God, like, people wrote original operas for television, and now it's the Kardashians, and it's Survivor, and it's like all this really stupid kind of, bargain basement reality television. And I think that's so much of what the Hunger Games are about. I mean, the way that the whole media presence of the contestants in the show so mirrors, like American Idol, or yes. The Voice or one of those dippy shows.
Right.
I think these
and Stanley Tucci as the host is so great.
He's terrific.
And he's
blinding choppers.
He steals every moment that he's in. And I'm curious as to how they made his teeth glow like that.
I suspect there's a little post, he and Elizabeth Banks, I think in the first movie they came off a little more cartoony, and this time we're actually sort of seeing them more as human beings.
Not so much with him, with her. She becomes a human being that you sort of feel a little empathy for.
But even he flinches a little in some of the stuff that he's asked to do. You can tell that he's doing it for the camera, but even he doesn't believe what he's saying anymore. Right. Anyway, there's a lot going on here, and I think so if you choose to interpret these movies at that level, they give it to you if you want it, and there's plenty to chew on here before this, you go buy your $600 chocolates.
Yeah, these definitely have more on their mind than most tentpole films, and that it comes from YA fiction is, you know.
Well, and again, you know,
I badmouthed YA stuff.
Right, a couple weeks ago, yeah.
And I think it deserves it, but I'm so glad that we have this now instead of Twilight, where you have to have someone like Bill Condon come in and make it halfway watchable,
right?
Because it's such nonsense.
Well, and also I think these movies are so positive for young women. You know, they are about a young firebrand woman who is succeeding on her own merits. Yes, she's in a love triangle, but she is strong and capable.
That love triangle is just like a small part of the story. I don't know how big it is in the book, but in the films, it plays almost like an afterthought sometimes. I mean, this is about her.
Yeah.
And her determination to make it through, to survive, to save people.
Save her family.
Yeah. And if I'm hearing you correctly, I haven't looked this up, but you were telling me that there's a bit of a teen boy backlash against this kind of stuff already, like echoing the Twilight backlash.
I don't know for sure. I know,
is that a thing that's happening?
I know. I've seen some crabby commentary on like the What the Flick, you know, page, but you know, who knows what that's
about. If that's real, and I haven't really heard much about it, if that's real, then teen boys, stop being stupid. Because just because it's about a girl doesn't mean it's ridiculous. Just because it's about a girl who is in love with someone doesn't make it ridiculous. And if you think that it does, then you're being an idiot, and you need to quit doing that. Quit being an idiot.
Well said, sir.
All teenage boys listening to me who fall into the thing that I just was talking about.
Stop it.
Which is probably no one.
Probably not. Our listeners are too smart for that kind of shenanigans.
Yeah.
Also opening this week is Delivery Man. Oh, God. I suffered through this movie so much.
I'm going to now make the song Jingle Bells with fart noises.
That would be more entertaining than sitting through Delivery Man. Okay. It's a remake of a French-Canadian film called Starbuck. It's the same writer-director doing it again. And I think there's a curse to people who remake their own movies, foreign language movies in Hollywood. I mean, the American version of The Vanishing was so terrible, and I'm sure there's some other ones. If anyone can think of a good one, let us know, but I think they're awful. This movie is rotten. Vince Vaughn plays a sort of ne'er-do-well who means well, and discovers that back in the day when he was a frequent sperm donor, that his issue...
Hyperactively frequent.
Yeah, because his
issue... He was real good at masturbating.
His issue brought forth like 500-plus kids out of the same
thing. Ezekiel chapter 23, verse 20.
20, yes.
The issue like horses.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is that the verse?
It's something like that,
Ezekiel 23, 20, 21,
it is 23, 20, right, yeah. Thank you, Mrs. Betty Bowers. And then like 100-plus of these kids have decided to do this sort of class action lawsuit to get the clinic to reveal to them the identity of their father. And Vaughn is embarrassed to have the world know that he spanks it so much, but then he can't resist sort of tracking down some of these kids and finding out what happened to them and who they are and what they're like. And he winds up getting involved in their lives in these weird ways. And some of them are, you know,
gross ways.
Some of them would be maybe cute, but then some of them are ridiculous where like he saves the girl from overdosing on heroin, but then lets her talk him out of putting her into rehab,
right, because
she just needs to go to work at Bloomingdale's and everything will be fine.
A job at Bloomingdale's is going to fix her heroin addiction.
And then like, you know, and then ultimately like, there's a kid who's like in a wheelchair, doesn't speak, who's got some sort of...
He appears to have very profound cerebral palsy.
Yeah, specific on it.
I was in college, one of my friends had extremely profound cerebral palsy, and I was one of my part-time jobs was his caretaker. I was his attendant. I got him up for breakfast and class every morning, and that was my gig. And he spoke in a very hard to understand way, he used a board mm-hmm. to speak for him. But this guy in this movie doesn't speak at all.
No.
Like, and he doesn't even appear to be aware that Vince Vaughn is there. Like, whatever the actor as this kid is doing.
Yeah, there's not a lot of lucidity here.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Which basically makes it easier.
And they never explain what he's got.
No, not at all. But
he's just in an institution.
Yeah, which makes it all the easier for Vince Vaughn to lug him around like a prop.
He pushes him around in the wheelchair, sort of like, here I am, being good.
Yeah, it's like the kids.
Check me out, everybody. He's caring.
He should be listed in the credits as Badge of Humanity. Like, that's all he is. It's super offensive. I couldn't believe it. Also, and it's never even made clear, like, how is this kid part of the lawsuit when it clears, like, he's completely never communicative, you
right.
know?
Yeah, someone on his behalf
I guess.
Has filed this thing, but you don't know who that is.
No, yeah. not at all. Anyways, this movie is just awful, and Vince Vaughn is trying to do something different, but he's just still being Vince Vaughn, and I'm sick of Vince Vaughn being Vince Vaughn at this point, frankly. Chris Pratt, who plays his lawyer...
Has all the funny lines.
We were talking about this on What the Flick. The movie would have been a little bit better if Chris Pratt had played the lead and Vince Vaughn had played the lawyer. A little bit better.
Maybe.
It would have still been phony and vomitrocious, but at least there'd been more Chris Pratt in it. Skip this movie. It stinks.
This is your last chance, though, I will say this. This is your last chance to see fat Chris Pratt. Because now that he's all ripped up for Guardians of the Galaxy, he's signed on for as many as they want him to be in, that bod is going to stay shredded.
I don't know.
So if you like your Chris Pratt fat, and lots of people do, that's, it's your last chance.
I have a suspicion we've not seen the last of fat Pratt. I mean, you'll recall what Tobey Maguire looked like between Spider-Man movies.
True.
So,
He got a little fleshy himself. That's
and then,
true.
And then he would, yeah. I remember when Aaron and I saw him like running once with his trainer, like right before the Spider-Man 3
right.
junket, so I think Pratt might yo-yo a bit if he feels like it. I think he can pull that off if he wants.
Who knows?
Anyway, we're going to go ahead and review Frozen because it opened Friday exclusively at the El Capitan Theater on Hollywood Boulevard, and it opens everywhere Wednesday. So it will be open before the next show airs. So what the heck?
This movie made you cry with feelings.
It's true. Even more so the second time. I saw it once about a month ago and liked it and found it really. I really enjoyed it. And then when Dave went to see it, I was like, I want to see this again. And part right. of me had that worry, oh, God, is it not going to be a second time? And it was...
And I didn't really want to go. I mean, I had seen a snippet of a trailer.
Uh-huh.
But I, was not a huge fan of Tangled. It had its moments.
Yeah, me neither.
But this is really great.
It is.
This is really terrific.
What I was going to say...
I was really surprised, and what surprised me the most is I didn't know I missed the old-fashioned princess musical
mm-hmm.
until I was watching a good one again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And these are what I was going to say before was seeing it a second time reminded me of when I saw Beauty and the Beast the first time and really kind of got a little choked up. And then I saw it a second time knowing the characters and the whole story and everything and just bawling.
Right.
And of course, the second time I had taken a bunch of nieces and nephews and they thought it was hilarious that I was like, So yeah, I did cry the second time. The princesses in this movie are smart. Again, like we were saying about Katniss, in Catching Fire, smart and proactive and strong and capable. And the story is about them. It's about the sisters' relationship.
Right.
And them being there for each other, and there are men in it, and there are love interests in it.
They are men who were not in the original tale.
Yeah, oh yeah. Apparently, this is as far afield as you can get from the Hans Christian Andersen story.
I don't think there was a talking snowman.
No, there's basically a woman who can create snow, which is I think that's about the only thing that they kept from the old story.
Yeah,
but the guys in this movie play an interesting role and have things to do, but ultimately they're not the focus. It's about the women.
They have a role to play in the lives of these two young women,
yes.
But I think they are only there to sort of balance the gender pool in the film. They're fine characters. One of them is a catalyst for plot. The other one is a fun supporting character.
Mm-hmm.
But they are not completely
essential.
Really, yeah, they're not essential. The story is about, like you said, these two sisters and how they come to learn that they need each other.
Right.
Yeah.
The older sister, Elsa, has the ability to create ice and snow, and her younger...
It's more than the ability, it's a curse.
Well, it's
a curse that she has to try to hide and get away from.
It begins as an ability.
Yes.
And her younger sister, blanking the name.
Girl number two.
Kristen Bell.
Veronica Mars.
Veronica Mars. So, you know, Elsa can create ice and snow, and as little girls, you know, the two of them sort of play in the palace ballroom, and you know, create these snowdrifts, and they build a snowman and everything. And then Elsa accidentally zaps her sister in the head with her ice power,
right?
And the parents have to take her to the trolls to bring her back to life. And so the trolls do so, but they make her forget the incident. She'll remember, you know, the fun times that she's had with Elsa, but she'll forget that Elsa has this magical power.
Right.
So from that point on, Elsa is terrified of her abilities and spends her entire life trying to hide him, like totally ignores her sister, like lives behind these closed doors.
She understands that that she has to do this or else the power will overtake her.
Right.
Like if she feels anything, good right. or bad, the power... It's destructive.
Right. Well, but what the trolls tell her is that fear will be her downfall and that right. love will be her salvation. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, she doesn't really listen. They don't really listen right. to that. And there's a whole lot of fear going on.
Right.
So it's all about suppressing and not feeling and tamping down and shutting out the sister. And the sister doesn't know why she's being shut out. And so right. that's a heartbreak for her. And so finally,
it is a heartbreak, too. I got to say, they hook you right at the very beginning yeah. of this movie with this sort of like
plaintive
this sibling separation mm-hmm. where one doesn't understand why the other one won't participate or talk to her, and she sings a song, and here's what's so great about these songs is that they carry plot and they yes. explain things, and they are
funny
old fashionedy sort of
show tune
kind of songs.
They're written by...
Which, again, I didn't know that I liked until I saw this.
They're written by Robert Lopez.
But they're heartbreaking. Like that Do You Want to Build a Snowman
yes,
song
is when I cry.
Gut-kicking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Robert Lopez, who worked on the scores for Avenue Q and Book of Mormon.
And he and his wife,
mm-hmm. Kristen Anderson Lopez, who wrote the songs for this together, previously wrote the songs for the 2011 Winnie the Pooh movie that we love so much.
2010 or 2011?
2011.
You sure?
I looked it up.
Yeah, okay.
That
really great Winnie the Pooh movie that I think a bunch of three-year-olds saw.
Maybe, yeah.
And not very many adults.
Yeah, it opened opposite.
Is that great.
It opened opposite the last Harry Potter movie, so it kind of got lost in the shuffle, but it's an exquisite little movie. A lot of plot things happen, and the kingdom is plunged into winter, and the younger sister has to try and talk the older sister into, like, you know, making the winter stop, and... God, this movie's really terrific. And, you know, they don't overdo the funny snowman. If you've seen him in the ads, you think, oh, God.
He dominates the ads.
There's yeah. just enough of him in the movie, I think.
And he's funny.
And he's
got funny things to say.
He's voiced by Josh Gad. He has a funny number about how he loves the idea of summer and he can't wait to see what. He goes, I can't wait to do whatever snow does in summer. Yeah, I love, love, love this movie. And if you are spending Thanksgiving with
I strongly liked it.
Fine.
Yeah.
If you are spending, if you're spending Thanksgiving.
And the only reason that I say that differently than you uh-huh. is because I'm just not that dude. Like, for the most part, it's not my thing.
Look,
and it took me by surprise.
No, same here. And that's why I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, you like
that's why I wanted to see
show tunes and Broadway stuff.
It's true, but
you do like that
but
stuff
I have
quite
not,
a bit.
But I have
and
not
I've sort of been divorced.
From I have not liked a Disney musical this much since Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, I agree with that.
Maybe Aladdin, you know, but certainly since
we are not Lion King people.
No,
I know that that's been a point of contention among some of our friends.
Yeah.
Some of our younger friends, mm-hmm. who are also film writers.
Yes.
Bips. Who are, you know, still in the tank for The Lion King.
Yeah, no.
And that is because you were born in the late 80s.
Actually, Bibbs is only 4 years younger than I am.
How old is... No, he's not.
That's what he said.
Bibbs is 30-whatever, 32 or something.
Then he thinks I'm younger than I am.
Bibbs is a baby.
Okay.
And you are not that young. And so...
thanks a lot.
I don't mean that you're emotionally a baby, Bibbs. I know you're listening. And so... Just talking about your numerical age, your Aaliyah
and Lion age. King.
Yeah. So Lion King is fine. It's beautifully animated. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeously animated. But holy crap, those songs.
I agree.
Some of the most kind of songs. From the minute they arrived in the pop culture square, those Elton John songs with Lion King,
yeah,
nauseated me almost from the get go. Like, if there could be a version of the Lion King without the songs, I'd probably go back and call it a masterpiece.
Oh, the circle of life.
I drove down to a wedding in Houston the year that movie came out with this dude I knew.
Oh, no.
A straight guy.
With the soundtrack.
By the way, a high school football coach, straight guy, who loved the Lion King soundtrack and sang along at top volume the whole way down. And I thought to myself, maybe we'll have a crash.
And I won't have to hear Hakuna Matata anymore.
And die, and I won't have to listen to this anymore. He would sing out loud to Can You Feel the Love Tonight? And like, just fist pump in the air. And I'm like, what? Why is this happening to me? So yeah, you can say I don't like it very much.
But yeah, Frozen is terrific. If you are spending Thanksgiving with kids around, by all means take them. If you're spending Thanksgiving without kids around, go anyway.
Go Well, no, don't go yet.
Well,
if you
wait
have
a couple
kids
of weeks.
And you're not down for kids all the time.
Go on a weeknight late.
Wait until, you don't want to be around screaming.
Although, I will say, this is one of those movies where kids shut up.
They did. We were in a press screening packed with children, and they were silent and attentive. Yeah.
Yeah. So
they were into it.
And then we each saw a new foreign film this week.
Yes, I saw Alexander Sokurov's Faust. I'm not going to tell you too much about it because I'm writing a review that will show up on linoleumknife.com. Excuse me, linoleum-knife.com.
Yes, let's be clear about that.
Linoleum-knife.com.
Here's a tip to anybody who ever wants to start a podcast. Make sure that the name that you pick for your show, .com, is available.
It would help. I mean, we got the dash, and the dash is not so much of a problem.
Yeah, it's not a deal breaker. But
it's
not.
It's fine. But the it is Sokurov's part four of his series of films about powerful men. And this is the weirdest Faust that I have seen in a long time. There's a homunculus in a jar. It's alive.
Of course there is.
And it's shot in a crazy way, in a variety of crazy ways that actually sort of the image is frequently distorted as you're watching the film. I'll explain.
Like in Crooklyn?
Yeah, I'll explain all of that in the review that I post this week. It's terrific and weird and beautiful to look at. This sort of very art historical sort of imagery. To explain more would make me sound crazy. So I'll be writing it up. We'll talk a little about it more next week. What I did post this week on linoleum-knife.com is my review of Frederick Wiseman's At Berkeley. So you can go back and read that review if you'd like. The 4-hour documentary about the state of California university system, specifically how it affects Berkeley and what is happening to higher education in general, the progressive disinvestment by the government in education across the board from pre-K to college. And how it's going to ruin public education in this country over time. It's already got us to the place where we're like 25th, 26th, 27th in the world.
Right.
In terms of education. That is not the way the United States used to be.
Yep.
And it is a direct result of...
Ronald Reagan.
Sorry. Ronald Reagan did this.
Yeah.
He started the ball rolling, and now it's that thing that's chasing Indiana Jones. And it's going to crush everything.
Right.
But, and when I say this is a four-hour documentary, I don't mean to scare you.
This is Frederick Wiseman's canvas.
It is how he works. He works in very long form storytelling.
No voiceover.
No interviews. He points his camera at stuff, and whatever perspective you get, whatever authorial sort of thing that happens in the film, comes from editing. But you get 4 hours of every little thing that goes on at a university, from football games to the robotics lab to faculty meetings to a student sit-in at the library protesting
budget cuts.
I think my favorite thing in the film is there's a student who says, you know, we've reached a world where it's no longer allowable to tax the yacht or the fourth home
right,
or the billionaire any more than he's already being taxed. But instead, we can cut jobs for janitors
right,
and teachers and raise student fees so that it's impossible to go to college.
Right.
And if you don't like it, too bad. Work yourself to death.
Yeah, because the billionaire bought the politician.
Boom, Hunger Games.
Yeah, basically.
So this movie is...
There's a double feature.
This movie is really great.
Mm.
It's worth the four-hour investment. It is, and we will post this on linoleumknife.com and also on the Facebook page. It is very slowly rolling out across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Theater by theater by theater. There's just like, you know, a couple of digital prints they made.
Right. He's his own distributor.
Yeah. He self-distributes. He's got everything under control. You will eventually be able to go buy this DVD.
From his website.
But he charges for them. Like, yeah. If you want to buy a DVD from Frederick Wiseman from Zipporah Films.
They're like 30, 40 bucks.
They're 30, 40 bucks.
Yeah.
You are investing in something for your DVD library.
Right.
Your hard copy, your hard media library.
Yes.
I assume eventually...
He'll stream.
He'll be selling something that streams.
Yeah.
In whatever way you can do that, that it's protected.
Right.
For now, though, he deals in hard copies. Mm. And
when you're at Zipporah Films, you can also...
They're worth having.
You can pick up a copy of The Store.
The Store, yes.
Which I feature in Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Yeah.
Now, the movie that I saw this week that you did not was Paolo Sorrentino's The Great Beauty. It is Italy's entry into the Academy Awards. And I know we've had an ongoing argument about La Dolce Vita.
One in which you are completely wrong.
This film...
And I am totally right.
This film is actually very reminiscent of La Dolce Vita.
You dislike it, which is unconscionable and shameful on your part. And I think it's amazing.
I think it's a flawed film. I don't dislike it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know more than you do.
Keep going.
And deep down,
yay!
You know it.
Yes, Alonso. You sure do know more than I do. Why don't you explain things to me while you talk about this new Italian film that reminded you of La Dolce Vita?
Well, not just me. Like it is sort of inevitable that people talk. Don't do the head and the chin thing.
Uh-huh.
Shut up.
Keep talking.
I'm not why you do that.
Can't wait to hear more words from you. Golden words.
It's about a character who's just turned 65. 40 years ago, he wrote a novel that meant a lot to a lot of people, and he's not accomplished anything since then. He's basically become a celebrity journalist.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Stop it. Anyway, and so the movie is about kind of disaffected, you know, fabulous people in Rome. It's about Rome itself. It's about the choices we make in life, and it's about what matters and what doesn't, and how the things that we think don't matter sometimes wind up becoming important, and vice versa. It's very almost sort of stream of consciousness. It's not a movie that has any sort of big overwhelming plot or story.
Right.
But you get to know this guy and the people that are in his circles, and it's so compelling and so gorgeous. I saw this movie on a screener and I immediately thought, I got to see this again on the big screen, right. Which I did this week.
If you live in Los Angeles, it's playing at the New Art.
Yeah, and it's getting a release. Yeah. Like I said, it's Italy's entry into the Oscars. I hope it makes it to the final five so that more people will see it. But yeah, I had a chance to do a screening this week for the Rap series where I did a Q&A with Signore Sorrentino, who his last film was that, I didn't see it, but that movie with Sean Penn as Robert Smith, Nazi Hunter.
This Must Be the Place. That was his film?
Yeah.
That wasn't very good.
That's what I heard. I didn't see it. This one, however, is dynamite. And I remember watching it again and knowing that I was going to have to do a Q&A with this guy, having to fight off being left speechless by it. I knew I was going to have to form sentences afterwards, but I really did get carried away with it. It's even now, it's a hard movie to talk about. Like, I wanted to write up something for the website, and it's hard to articulate.
Do it. Stop being dumb.
It's hard to articulate.
Since you know so much more than me, I'm expecting an incredible review that you're going to write.
In the meantime, people should totally go see this movie. I absolutely loved it. It's one of my favorite movies this year. And even though, yes, it does obviously have a lot of things in common with La Dolce Vita, it also, I think you could make a case that it you know, was influenced by Roma, another Fellini movie, which is about the city of Rome, because it plays such a prominent part in the film. And it reminded me a little of Wild Strawberries, actually, in terms of being about this sort of older intellectual and, you know, moments of his previous moments of his life popping up and you know, him sort of reflecting on where he's been, what he's done, and who he's known. It's a dynamite film. One thing I have written for linoleum-knife.com that we'll be posting this week, reviews of two new Christmas movies that are coming out on DVD. One that's getting a bit of a theatrical release in a few cities, called Angels Sing, with Harry Connick Jr. and Connie Britton and Willie Nelson and Lyle Lovett. And one that's coming out from Wolf Video called The Perfect Wedding. So that should be going up probably on Tuesday this week. So
you're writing reviews of those. You're not going to talk about them right now.
No.
You don't need to.
People can go to the site and read those.
Right. Yeah, go to our site.
And
buy a t-shirt.
Yeah, as I said, we haven't mentioned, buy a t-shirt, buy a book.
We've had about, I guess, 10 t-shirt orders.
Uh-huh.
And we're when we get 20 pre-orders, then we can order the batch.
Right.
So we'll probably give that another week or so,
yeah.
To give you guys the opportunity to spend more money.
Please.
And
they make dynamite gifts.
And if they don't, if we don't get the 20 pre-orders, we're still going to order them anyway. Yeah.
But it would help us greatly.
But it would be great if we had those 20 pre-orders. You could just
underwrite that for us, because we're broke.
You go to the website. It will teach you everything you need to know about how to order a linoleum knife t-shirt, a slimming black t-shirt with the words linoleum and knife on the front.
In that order, in a
slim, snappy little font,
mm-hmm.
Created by our friend Graham Colbeans.
Yeah, it's a Hanes tagless, 100% cotton. You can also drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com if you want to order a shirt. You can also email us there to order a copy of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, my holiday movie guide,
It's not your holiday movie guide. It's your Christmas movie guide.
I know, but it's Christmas in the title.
There's like two Hanukkah movies, right? In existence.
Yeah, and only one that I write about.
Right. Hebrew Hammer,
yeah,
which is good.
And Eight Crazy Nights,
which is not good.
I just said Christmas in the title, I didn't want to be like the 90210 episode. Christmas. That's coming on SoapNet, by the way. Did you see I put it in TiVo?
The Christmas episode?
That episode, yes.
Oh, good.
I'll try and post this again. It's this hysterical thing Brett at CineFamily here in Los Angeles created. He basically took the 1991, it was I think the first season, 90210 Christmas episode, and just edited together every example of the word Christmas in the episode. In one-hour episode, it said something like 200-plus times. It's the craziest thing. I love it. Anyway, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. You can order it directly from us. I will sign it to whomever you like. You can also, if you are traveling this Thanksgiving and you are wanting to map out what your December movie watching is going to be, put it on your Kindle. Read it on the plane. You know, check off movies that
you want to see.
It is Kindle available. So,
and if you buy the copy directly from you, you get the special upgrade version. You get the
on paper.
You get it on paper. You get
autographs.
An autograph with a special personal note. You get Christmas surprises in the book. We are even going to gift wrap it.
We are.
For you. Yeah.
So, what a bargain.
Yeah.
All right. That's all of our movies this week. What's your DVD pick?
The Canyons. It comes out on DVD Tuesday.
Oh, yay.
Some sort of unrated director's cut, which I assume just means more wiener.
I suppose. Yeah. Very underrated. I liked it a lot. Paul Schrader's film that starred...
hated it, and people loved it.
Starred Lindsay Lohan.
I was really into it.
And adult film star James Dean. And
it is perfectly boring.
Written by Bret Easton Ellis. Yeah. I found it a very compelling portrait of Los Angeles anomie.
Yeah.
My DVD pick this week is the 25th anniversary Mystery Science Theater 3000 box set. I wanted to give a shout out to the fact that today, November 24th, marks the 25th anniversary of the first broadcast of Mystery Science Theater 3000 on KTMA-TV in Minneapolis. I'm a huge, huge fan of the show. I had the good fortune to get to know Mary Jo Peel over the years and host a program with her and Joel Hodgson and Trace Beaulieu and J. Elvis Weinstein and Frank Conniff at the USA Film Festival in Dallas for the 20th anniversary. It's been a while now. And it's just a show that I just remember the first time I saw it, it was one of those blow the back of my head off moments of this was made for me. Like, someone made this show for me. You know, I totally immediately got into what they were doing and the humor of it and the style of the jokes and how they were playing off of old movies and just sort of casting out a wide net into all of pop culture and dragging in high and low and everything in between.
Yeah.
It's a show that still holds up, and I'm excited that it's been around this long and still has such a fervent fan base.
Also, we love Mary Jo.
Also, we love Mary Jo. Who wouldn't? Was that it on letters this week? Or
No, I have one more letter.
Okay. And we would still like to hear your Christmas top 10 list.
So from some of you.
From some of you.
Make them good. No TV specials.
Yeah, that is kind of a thing.
This is from Ryan. Greetings, Dave White and Garbanzo Fernalde.
Ho, 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 ho.
Hey! Dude, I like that.
Garbanzo Fernalde.
Yeah. This is my second attempt to get knifed by sending you a list of my favorite movies to watch during holiday times. I sent you a list of my favorite Halloween movies, horror movies in October, which apparently never reached your mighty eyes. I don't know what happened to it. I don't know. It's my fault. I know. I admit freely it's my fault because I sometimes lose the letters. Mm. Not all the time. Just sometimes. They fall through the cracks every once in a while.
You are all cracks.
Now that I am through crying, I have assembled another list and I'm praying for a second chance to die by the blade. Or you're going to die by the blade. Right now. And I really am pretty sure you're going to kill me when you read this list.
Oh, you know, we never knifed Jennifer from Canada, by the way.
100%.
Yes, because you sent us a Partridge
Family. Oh, wait. You would be 95 because you put two TV specials on it, but you sent us a Partridge Family cassette.
Yes.
You're like 105%.
Absolutely. Yeah. Extra credit.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Great.
A Muppet Family Christmas. Again, okay, with this. He writes, sin number one is it was made for television, but check it out if you haven't seen it.
Which you have not, clearly.
I have not.
Okay.
Home Alone.
All right.
I like Home Alone. You're not a fan, but...
It's okay. I have warmed to it somewhat. I mean, I didn't see it when it came out. I literally didn't see it until I was writing the book. I get the appeal. I think my favorite parts of it are not why people love it. Like, I think the violence is sort of eh. But
it's my favorite part.
I think it's actually, I like the stuff like between him and the old man. I like the sort of the sentimental stuff.
Right.
And I think, and this is the thing I always say when I talk about the book, that you can draw a direct line between Scrooge to George Bailey to Kevin McAllister going through the same sort of Christmas, you know, catharsis.
Yeah. Hook. Is that what's Christmassy about Hook? I don't know.
Maybe.
He writes, do you hate this movie? If so, tell me why. I want to know why.
I haven't seen it since 1991. I remember hating it then.
It's been 22 years since I've seen Hook. I don't remember anything about it other than that I dislike
it. I just remember it being ugly and garish and loud and stupid.
What's Christmas-ish about it? Is there something?
I don't know. It's been so long since I've seen it, I don't remember.
All right, we're not giving you this one.
No.
Muppet's Christmas Carol.
Sure, definitely.
A Christmas Story.
Yep.
Jingle All the Way.
Wow.
Yeah, you're going to die by the night.
You were a child of the 90s.
Miracle on 34th Street?
You better mean the original and not the Mara Hobel version. Or Mara Wilson.
Mara Hobel.
Mara Wilson. Who? She's the girl from Mommy Dearest.
Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang.
Yes, totally.
Grumpy Old Man. What's Christmassy about that?
It's winter. I don't remember if it's Christmas
or not. No. That's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
I have a feeling you're going to take a grump on this one, too. So two of them that are terrible.
Grumpy Old Man and Hook.
And Jingle All the Way. Three of them that
three
are
of
terrible.
Them were terrible.
All right, 70.
70. That's a passing grade. It's
you're,
a C.
Yeah, you're bad. You're C+. Plus.
It's a Christmas C.
Thank you for so much entertainment from your podcast and your writing. I found Dave through movies.com nearly 8 years ago.
Yeah, well then.
That's about how long I've been there.
Yeah.
About as long as he's been working for them, I think, and I discovered Alonzo through Dave. I think the two of you combined create the perfect film dude. Yeah.
We are the film dude with two heads.
Yeah. Enjoy your favorite holiday and be safe this Christmas.
Ah.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks.
Your list is okay. Your list is perfectly okay. That's it. We're done.
All right. Well, as always, we thank you for listening. And, of course, we urge you to visit with our critic friends in their various media. Check out ChristyLemire.com. Go to Sirius Radio for the Rotten Tomatoes show with Matt Atchity and Gray Drake. And also, of course, at Sirius OutQ, the Frank DiCaro show and Derek and Romaine. In the podcast world, the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli. Throwing Shade, Team Jack, the Schmoes Know, the B-Movies podcast, of course. Who are always very patient when I send them texts because they got something maybe a little not quite correct.
Wrong. When they do things that are wrong.
Film Spotting, SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can subscribe
to this. Is it Whitney that does things wrong or is it Bibbs? Who's wrong?
It depends.
Who's more wrong most of the time?
I don't want to say. But it's
Bibbs.
They each have their moments.
It's Bibbs, right?
But look, you know what?
I'm tell sure me who it is.
We do too. Because you're flying by the seat of your pants and saying you don't always.
I don't know that we're wrong.
It's not like we have a producer in the booth who's checking things for us. So I totally get it if they misremember something off the top of their head. Because we all do it. It's fine. You can subscribe to the show at iTunes. And if you want to leave us a review, that would be super great because the more good reviews we get, the better placement we get on their homepage. And Some of you have been writing some lately, and we really appreciate it.
Yes.
You can stream the show for free at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast.
Yes.
And if you haven't already liked it, please do. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at getglue.com. And once again, linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. That's the email address. You can send us lists, questions, comments. You can order, you can pre-order the awesome Linoleum Knife t-shirt, and you can order copies of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Eventually, in about 10 days, the commentary.
Yes, that
also
too.
That.
Our White Christmas commentary, yeah. Which is going up very soon. So many things.
Handwritten letters. Cassettes in the mail. You know how to make us love you. Just I'm telling you this right now.
So everybody have a safe and wonderful Thanksgiving, and we'll be back next week.
Goodbye.